Today is April 17th, and I am with Andy Chan in his, well, in a conference room, not in his office, at Washington University, or more affectionately known of as WashU in St. Washington, Louis.
Right. Or you're from Missouri, it's WashU.
WashU, okay. Okay, well, let's start with something simple, like when and where you were born.
Okay, so I was born in Hong Kong in 1959. And basically I was raised in Hong Kong, and we immigrated to the United States in 1967. So when I came to the United States, I was 7 years old.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about your family, your parents, maybe your grandparents.
Mm-hmm. So my parents, who are still alive, my dad is a civil engineer. Mm-hmm. He actually worked for the Hong Kong government at the time when we were there. And my mom in Hong Kong was a high school teacher. And one of the major reasons why they came to the United States was primarily because of educational opportunities that were available in the United States as compared to Hong Kong.
So for you kids.
For the kids, mm-hmm. Right. So I'm the eldest of four. I have two younger sisters and a younger brother. And actually, all of us were born in Hong Kong before we immigrated to the States. So in some ways, I see my parents as sort of of pioneers, taking four kids. Youngest at that point was just a little bit over 1 year of age.
Oh, wow.
With four kids to the United States and basically starting totally a new career.
Mm.
My dad continued being an engineer, and my mother, because the teaching credential issues were not mm-hmm. the same, actually was not able to teach, and actually, you know, was very helpful primarily as she basically stayed home taking care of us for most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And after all of us got out of the house over the past now a little bit over 10 years, she's gone back and taken on a second career. And I think my mom's and my dad's stress for education actually mm-hmm. has affected us a lot, all four of our kids, mm-hmm. all four of us kids, in that while they were working, they still continued going to school.
They went to school.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So my mom, having accumulated probably enough credits for at least 10 different degrees, finally graduated, I think now about 5 or 6 years ago, initially with a bachelor's, and uh-huh. now working for a master's in, of all subjects, civil engineering.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So after all the kids were out of the house, she actually went back and took on a second career.
Uh-huh.
So initially, she actually went back to teaching and taught as a teaching assistant at the local high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then after getting the degree, she's gone back to work for the county government
mm-hmm.
In California mm-hmm. in a variety of engineering-based jobs. So both my dad and my mom now are engineers.
Ah.
And despite having been grown up and now out of the house.
Uh-huh.
So that's sort of the background in which uh-huh. you have to appreciate my upbringing in that education was clearly one of the highest priority mm-hmm. issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of where my upbringing mm-hmm. came about. I mean, the other interesting thing really is that in the transition from coming to the United States, of which I remember very little about, you know, as to what happened, my experiences in Hong Kong, the educational process was also very, very different. In that the things that were clearly emphasized retrospectively in Hong Kong were really the math and sciences, of which once we came here, we clearly excelled in. And yet the other things, such as social sciences, literature, we were just extremely behind it. So it led to a sort of dichotomous achievement rate when we were going to school, in that we would excel phenomenally well in certain subjects and not in others. And it took us, I would still say it's still taken us a lot of time to sort of obtain a even balance between those kinds of topics. And I'm sure those things are rather critical in the ultimate determination of how we ended up where we are right now in terms of our interests, in terms of what kinds of areas of study that we eventually pursued, and the way that we think about problems.
Well, you were only seven, though, when you came, so...
That's right.
And you were the oldest.
Right.
So the younger ones couldn't have been too awfully far behind in their...
Right. Well, I think, yeah, I think those things predominantly for me, although the issue of the priority for education obviously permeates through the entire family.
Right.
And then I think what happens usually is that I'm a firm believer that what you ultimately become is clearly affected by the factors or the environment in which you're, you know, you're exposed to. And that's, I can clearly, well, we can get into later, certain individuals or certain sets of situations that clearly affected what I ultimately wanted to be, or what I ultimately, the studies that I pursued. So I think from that standpoint, since I was the eldest and, you know, these things were rather formative, those things undoubtedly affected my siblings also down the road. So I think it's sort of a domino effect. Is it environmentally dictated inherited trait?
Okay. So, what, if anything, do you remember about Hong Kong? You said you didn't remember too much.
I don't remember too much. I just the few things I do remember, which are extremely spotty. One was the education. Okay, that there was still a huge stress on education, and most of the things I remember relate to certain aspects of schooling. I remember, you know, I forget exactly which grade this was, whether it was a first grade or second grade, staying up very late at night, memorizing Chinese poetry. Okay, because that's what was mandated. I went to a Sacred Heart Catholic school, and it must have been extremely competitive. And retrospectively, I think, given the two educational systems, it was not a very, very nurturing environment in that they already set up students competing with each other, you know, from grade one. You know, the other things I remember are writing pages and pages when we're trying to learn penmanship in first or second grade of just O's, of just cursive O's for pages on end. Just to make sure that you know that your O's were between the lines.
So you were learning our alphabet rather than the Chinese alphabet, or both.
Right. It was a British-based school, so we actually learned both English and Chinese from. It must have been at least grade one.
I see.
So either I would be speaking here with a British accent, or or the way I talk, and it was very determined by either the person that taught me English, the teacher that taught me English, was either from the United States or from Britain.
I see.
And obviously, my teacher happened to be from the United States. So that actually facilitated the transition from the United States, from Hong Kong to the United States without significant amount of difficulty, at least that, as far as I could remember.
So how good was your English by the time
My English was, I don't remember any problems with my English by the time I got here, you know, when I was seven. Because again, there was, the schools were extremely academically inclined. We had courses in English, et cetera. So, and the expectations were that you had to be fluent. already from day one.
Wow.
So from that standpoint, the larger amount of academic challenges actually paid off, mm-hmm. In terms of the transition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did you speak Chinese at home?
I did. But of course, this is now, a 7-year-old vocabulary. And actually, it is one of those things that I miss, because when we came here, I could still write Chinese. Mm-hmm. And the first things to go is the writing.
Sure.
So now, basically, I can make out certain characters. And actually, the 5 years that I spent in San Francisco actually significantly improved my Chinese, because I was the at that time the only Chinese rheumatologist at the university, and boom, I had this entire population of Cantonese speaking patients. Mm-hmm. So my Chinese, out of necessity, actually got better. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, since after moving back, it's gotten worse again. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm not fluent at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can make out certain characters. I can write my name, but unfortunately, that's about the extent of my ability to read and write.
Mm-hmm. So Cantonese is the dialect.
Yes.
Now, once you got here, did your parents stop speaking Chinese at home?
No, and my parents continued speaking Chinese at home. We still continue to try to write, but, as other things came into play in terms of academic pressures, of other things that one needs to do, it was just one of those things that unfortunately fell aside. Mm-hmm. Right now, if I have a conversation with my parents, it's sort of an interesting conversation in that they will speak in Chinese sprinkled with English words.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And and for me, I can understand it. I can listen to them. I totally understand exactly what they're saying. Whereas, for example, my wife, who's Caucasian, would be sitting there, or, they'll be talking to her or talking to me in English, and then in the middle of a sentence go directly into Chinese. Uh-huh. And then, of course, she goes, wait, I don't understand what you're talking about. And I can likewise, converse in it fairly interchangeably, mm-hmm. because there are certain words that are just easier to say in English. Mm-hmm. And hence the interchangeability. If you think that way, actually, it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. And one of the more interesting features is actually I remember doing mathematics. Okay, so doing arithmetic as I was growing up, after I came to the United States, I remember distinctly still doing my arithmetic in Chinese and then translating into English. And I still remember, grade 5, grade 6, 2-3 years down the road, I was still doing my math in Chinese and then mentally translating it back into English. Mm-hmm. But now, that's all gone. Mm-hmm. I basically think, read, and write in English.
Mm. I actually read an article once about the fact that kids will continue to do math in the language they learned it in for many years afterwards.
Right.
So that doesn't surprise me.
It just seemed odd to me at the time. I was going, why am I doing my math in Chinese and then translating it to English?
Well, now you know you did the study.
That's right. I'm one of the...
Okay. What about your grandparents?
Yeah, I remember very little about my grandparents. My paternal great-grandfather, I think, passed away before I was born. Mm-hmm. He had gone to Australia.
Oh.
And my paternal grandmother is alive, okay? And she still is alive, and she lives in Los Angeles right now.
Oh, okay.
So I see her, the few times when we go, are able to get back to Los Angeles, which is probably about once a year.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said great-grandfather.
No, I'm sorry. I'm talking about my grandfather.
Paternal grandfather.
Not great-grandfather.
Okay.
My paternal grandfather and paternal grandmother. And my paternal grandmother was a typical grandmother who basically raised, I think she had something like 12 or 13 kids.
Wow.
So it was a large family.
Yeah.
And then my maternal, I did not know my maternal grandfather. And my maternal grandmother still lived in Hong Kong when she was alive and passed away there, probably, I forget exactly when, but 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I've never gone back to visit Hong Kong. So the last time I vaguely remember her was just time-wise when we were still in Hong Kong. So I really don't have any recollection of who she was or what she was like either.
Mm-hmm. That was a huge move for your mother then, because she was never going to see her mother again.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, at that time, you know, this was in 67, it was still fairly easy to go back and forth. Mm-hmm. You know, there was not a threat that the communists were going to come and take over. Mm-hmm. It was fairly easy to get visas to go back and forth. But you're right. I think, you know, from that standpoint, I really think my parents as pioneers in terms of coming to a country. I mean, the only people they knew here was that we had an older uncle. My dad had an older brother who was in Oregon at the time. And yet, you know, we came to California, and one of my dad's best friends was already here, and it was already established. So it wasn't like he was moving, and there was already a huge number of people that he knew in the United States.
Yeah, sure.
Wow. So at that point, without a doubt, it was one of those extremely high-risk things that, you know, if you asked me whether I'd be willing to take my entire family and, let's say, move to even Germany, I'd say you gotta be out of your mind.
Uh-huh.
But that's the kind of, you know, huge change that I think that that they underwent.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, tell me a little about your siblings then.
So, like I said, I'm the oldest of four. The second oldest, who's my sister Beatrice, she's just, I think, something like 18 months younger than I. So the family is interesting in that out of the four kids, there were two sets of kids that were 18 months between each other.
Mm-hmm.
And between the second and third, between my two sisters, was, I think, about five or so years.
Oh, okay. Okay. So two groups of
two. So there are two groups of two, and the two groups of two usually were a little bit closer than the other ones. Just, I think, because, you know, even though it's a five-year difference, you know, you'd say, yeah, it's 40 versus 35, but when you're talking about 12 and 7 or 16 and 11, that's a huge difference. In any case, my older of the two sisters, she's a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then my younger of my two sisters, who's the third oldest in the family, is a gastroenterologist. Mm-hmm. So she went to medical school, actually came to St. Louis to Barnes Hospital to do her residency, and then went back to California to do her GI fellowship. And she's in practice. She's in a part-time practice right now. And the youngest of four is my brother, who graduated from law school a few years ago. So that's pretty much the four of us.
Okay. How did you get along as kids?
We always fought. This, you know, I remember. There was always issues of who was going to get what space and whatever, things like that. I mean, it's always hard for me to guess whether we had a normal relationship growing up or not, just because I don't, that's the thing, that's the relationship that, you know, for which you had.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, I think we got along fine. Mm-hmm. You know, there were always fights between brothers and sisters and sisters and sisters and things like that, but didn't seem to be anything too outrageous or anything like that. So our parents pretty much kept us in line.
Uh-huh. They were strict?
They were pretty strict. I mean, I think, again, because because in the environment was primarily so based on education, because that's what my parents came here for. All of us were very geared towards those kinds of activities.
Right.
And that's where the emphasis always was. Mm-hmm. So because of that, we didn't have a whole lot of time to actually get into too much trouble. Mm-hmm. And I think that the kind of things that, you know, high school kids or junior high school kids could do in those days are totally different than what they can do now. The place that we grew up in, we actually, you know, in high school I went to was in Irvine, California. And at that time, Irvine, California was basically just the, this is in the 70s now, was just the high school, a couple of housing tracks, and farmland.
So
that
the,
was it.
The Irvine campus of the university hadn't opened yet?
It had opened.
It had.
But it was just the high school, I'm sorry, UC Irvine.
Uh-huh.
And then that was it.
Okay.
And, you know, and over the last 30, or even the last 20 years, the city has significantly changed.
Yeah.
But the things that, you know, kids did in those days were they went to school, you did your extracurricular activities, mm-hmm. And those were about it. You know, you didn't have, we didn't have that many malls. The malls were far away.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have transportation easily, mm-hmm. and, you know, not many kids at that in those days had cars.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't as much as what is available for kids that, you know, can
mm-hmm.
do today.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was, in that way, a very, very different world,
mm-hmm.
in that things were probably slower.
Mm-hmm.
Things were, in some ways, you would probably say less problematic, in that kids could have lesser number of things to get
mm-hmm.
into trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much it was basically whatever you did in terms of your extracurricular activities or the academics portion.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things pretty much kept us totally out of trouble.
Okay.
Because I just remember, you know, we would go to school,
yeah.
go to high school, and actually I was initially a part of this. There was an experimental program that was being started between the University High School and UC Irvine, where they would take high school students as early as their sophomore years. And we would take classes at the college level. Okay, so I forget what exactly the program was called. But they started with about, probably like a half a dozen kids from University High School. And the program actually, I think, is much larger now.
Mm-hmm.
And you could take, you know, one to two classes, I think was my recollection.
Mm-hmm.
College level classes with the college students after school.
Oh, this was after school. It wasn't part of your school then.
Well, it was part of the schooling in that, you know, most of the classes we would take would be in the afternoon. So a typical high school curriculum would be six classes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you would take, let's say, five classes, and then you would go over to the college campus and take whatever the course is.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, you know, the advanced placement courses were just beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So the availability of coursework at the university, complemented by some of these advanced placement courses, were actually two different ways by which one could complement, you know, the basic education.
Right.
So after a while, you know, you ran out of classes to take.
Mm-hmm.
Because the high school was not that big. It was 2,000 students in total,
mm-hmm.
which meant about 400 to 500 students per class.
So it was a four-year high school?
It was a, I'm just trying to remember now. It was a four-year, 9 through 12.
9 through 12.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I actually want to spend some more time on your high school years,
mm-hmm.
but I want to sort of keep the chronology going
okay.
a little bit. Let's back up to your arriving. You came to California.
That's
from
correct.
Hong Kong.
Right. We came to Los Angeles.
Not to Orange County?
No, that's right. So we actually, my grade school was in the San Fernando Valley in a city called Panorama City, which is, again, totally different then than it is now.
Yeah, it's not such a great neighborhood now.
and I remember going there.
Mm-hmm.
We rented an apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't, retrospectively, I don't remember anything that was so unusual about
mm-hmm.
schooling. You know, you went to school, mm-hmm. you walked to school. School wasn't that far away. It was about probably a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
You went through third, fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade. There was nothing that I can remember that was so, that was extremely unusual or anything that stuck out that was unusual about it.
Were you, did you stick out? That's my question, either academically or in any
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, you know, as I briefly discussed before, you know, there were certain subjects that we would just clearly excel
right.
in.
Right.
To the point where the teacher just got bored by us.
Uh-huh.
You know, when it came to math,
yeah.
send Andy out to clean the erasers, you know, because there was nothing. I mean, the system in Hong Kong was a little bit unusual in that, from what I could tell, two grades worth of elementary school in the United States is comparable to one grade in Hong Kong, okay? So I vaguely remember my parents telling me, or, you know, whether I wanted to skip a couple grades because they thought in the United States, because, for example, my math, even though it was third grade, was thought to be already at the fifth or sixth grade level. We had already done fractions and exponentials and a number of other things that that it was just being done here. But I think wisely my parents decided that socially it was probably not the best thing for us to do. And there's clearly certain subjects that we just had not gotten a huge amount of education in, such as American history. You know, they had these courses that I vaguely remember back called citizenship, retrospectively. I don't really remember what exactly we learned. But I think things of social responsibility, this kind of thing was not exactly a high priority in the education in Hong Kong. So those classes we took, and we did well in them, but it was at least something that we had not learned before. So I remember we spent a lot of, I spent a lot of time cleaning erasers. But that, but there's nothing unusual, anything else that was unusual about it. I mean, I think what was more unusual maybe it was also in terms of sticking out, wasn't we stuck out, but I think this is just a normal growing up process. Okay, so after grade school, we would go to junior high school. We were there for 7th grade, 8th grade. And actually, it was in the Los Angeles system, was just, I think it was 7, 8, and 9. But then I transitioned into high school in Orange County because Orange County began at grade 9. And I think 7th and 8th grade were just very, very unusual years, I think, in everybody's life. In that there were a lot more... it always felt like you always had decisions to make. And that probably is true. In 7th and 8th grade, it's a different kind of environment. You know, 1st through 6th, at least, in where we went to elementary school, it was a very, very nurturing yet closed environment in that you had one teacher. You had one class. You hung around with everybody that's, that was in your class. And immediately in junior high school is very different because, you know, you had a homeroom, which was what you started with. But then you went had different colleagues or you had different students in every different kind of class. And hence, and because the school is bigger, because now, you know, I think, I forget exactly how many elementary schools all came together, you all of a sudden met people that you had never met before. And that, I think, during that first year or two, it's not traumatic, but it, it just increases one's exposure and one's awareness of all the different things that exist within the world. So from that standpoint, it was, it probably was a more challenging time. It was nothing unusual about it, but probably more challenging. And then, of course, once when one gets to high school, actually, I think it actually becomes a little bit easier there because there are clearly even greater number of diversified groups, I think, in high school. But I think the exposure then in intermediate school or junior high school sort of readies one for that kind of experience. But in high school, clearly, I mean, I think this is true for every high school, and it doesn't matter who you are. You clearly differentiate to certain groups. There were certain groups that were more academically inclined, certain groups that were more sports inclined, and then there's every weird group or unusual group in between. So I think there clearly you have more specialized groups, mm-hmm. or you know, you had fewer number of individuals that you actually specifically interacted with in each group.
Now, why did your parents decide to go to Orange County?
Just primarily for jobs. My dad had a job in the Valley when he first came, mm-hmm. and then he had a great opportunity in actually in Santa Ana. Mm-hmm. And an amazing thing again, you know, just what my dad does. He commuted for a full year until the new academic year began.
Yeah.
And this was, you know, in the 70s, so this was good traffic relative to now. And he still had a good 60-minute commute mm-hmm. between Santa Ana and Panorama City.
Sure.
And then we moved down to, after the year was over, we moved down. We actually lived in Tustin for a year, mm-hmm. and then ultimately we moved to Irvine. Mm-hmm.
So when you were a kid, obviously you did very well in school. What did you do for play?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, because I can't remember exactly what we did for play. I mean, part of it was at that time computers were just beginning to mm-hmm. be accessed into even the general population. And my mom actually made me, and wisely so, probably, beginning to take in computer courses. Mm-hmm. So there were a couple friends that, you know, we would go to UC Irvine, take these courses, and actually, at
so this was
times,
in high school.
This
already.
Was in high school.
Okay.
We actually spent a lot of time, you know, mm-hmm. doing homework assignments and being on the computer. Mm-hmm. This is the, you know, just to sort of place it. These are the times when computer programs were these huge boxes of computer cards, mm-hmm. or you know, rolls of ticker tape. Mm-hmm. That's how you stored your programs. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. The other things were in terms of things that we did outside of just classroom work, but still we were clearly still academically related. You know, was that I debated, which actually is a great experience. Mm-hmm. I played chess. And then there were a variety of things that they would assemble people for, like there was this thing called the math team mm-hmm. that we would compete for mm-hmm. in certain types of regional competitions. I ran track for a couple of semesters. Mm-hmm. And that pretty
running?
Much was, well, I hate to run it, but it was a two-miler.
Oh, okay.
I got bored after about the sixth or seventh lap around the track.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but that pretty much filled most of what I remember.
These are all of these pursuits are sort of organized and academic in a way.
I mean,
playing chess and computers and everything. Mm-hmm. Was there ever a time in your life when you just went outside and, you know, played hide and seek with the other kids in the neighborhood?
Well, we would play a couple of afternoons, not probably during the week. I mean, there were enough kids on our block. Mm-hmm. We had a great cul-de-sac that was at the very end. Mm-hmm. But there were enough kids on our block that we would just go out and play either football or baseball with a tennis ball.
Uh-huh.
We didn't want to break anything.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there were a couple of people that lived right across from us, and enough kids up and down the block.
Uh-huh.
We would say, you know, first down is every mailbox on the right side, you know, mm-hmm. touchdown is the tree down there.
Right.
But that was probably about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that unfortunately I wish that we had done more, but again, it's more structured than anything, was that in grade school and in junior high school, I played the violin, okay? And we had great instructors. Mm-hmm. I mean, the junior high school band leader was the guy that played the tuba in Mission Impossible.
Oh.
Okay? And
only in L.A.
Only in L.A., because only in our high school teacher. The great thing was that, you know, so, but the schedule that I had, I remember, I don't know exactly why. So the first year I played in the junior high school orchestra,
uh-huh.
and this was a big deal at this junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
The you know, our orchestra was probably 150 kids,
mm.
okay, and The band was easily 150 kids. But for some reason, I don't exactly remember why, I couldn't take the orchestra class. So they worked out a deal, because I really wanted to play violin, that I played violin in the band.
Okay. And were you the only
part.
Violin?
I was the only violin in the band.
Okay.
I played the flute parts, right? And then, of course, during the shows and everything like that, I would actually go back and play with the orchestra. But when we moved down to Orange County, University High School was very, very small at the time, mm-hmm. to the point they didn't even have basically an active music department, mm-hmm. in terms of instrumentals. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of when I gave that up. Mm-hmm. But I wish, actually, retrospectively, that was a pursuit that I had continued.
Uh-huh. Now, did you study privately, or you learned to play at school?
We learned to play at school, and uh-huh. there were a couple summers that we would go off. You know, they have these music camps, mm-hmm. That we actually had private lessons in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. It was nothing that I really took. I was never good enough, or took it seriously enough to be really, 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 mm-hmm. you know, quality class.
Do you ever pick it up now, or?
I don't. I mean, taking up the violin isn't so easy.
Yeah.
Whereas the other thing I wish I actually had gotten into was actually playing the piano, because mm-hmm. the piano is a much different instrument. My mm-hmm. sister took instructions to play piano, and it's much easier just to sit down and just start to play. Mm-hmm. Although I was actually a serious accordion player.
Oh, really?
Okay. I was a pretty serious accordion player for actually a number of years. We took instruction. We actually competed. Uh-huh. But again, an accordion is not one of those instruments you can just leisurely sit down, uh-huh. you know, and just play 10, 15 minutes just to be relaxing about it.
Right. But you do know how to do fingering on
the
keyboard.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So that's why actually I can play it. Uh-huh. The piano a little bit. Mm-hmm. I can pick it up just because I can read the music, but I've never had any formal instruction in uh-huh. piano.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That's why, you know, all these things now we're trying to force our own kids to do. It's like, I know this is good for you. This is what you should do. But they're going like, no, why should I do this? I don't want to do
this. Right. And then someday, when they're grown up, they come back and say, why didn't you make me practice?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Okay, so what was your social life like when you were mm-hmm. a kid?
I think our social life was extremely limited mm-hmm. in terms of exposure. Mm-hmm. Again, number one, I think the amount of time if you added just the number of hours that we did, it took to go to school, go over to the college campus, play chess, mm-hmm. debate, etc. It was extreme. I mean, that basically is 80-90% of your time, excluding homework already. Mm-hmm. So then the number of hours that we had to interact with people were very limited. They were predominantly either interactions that we had with other people that had either common interests, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, we were going to a tournament for debating or a math competition, a chess tournament, mm-hmm. Or just interacting with people, our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And outside of that, there were very, very few interactions we had with, you know, anybody else. It's not like, you know, partly again because of the time that, mm-hmm. you know, we grew up, and probably the suburbanness mm-hmm. and remoteness of Irvine at the time, mm-hmm. It wasn't like we would go and hang out at the mall, mm-hmm. because the mall was very far away. Mm-hmm. And again, also, I think in terms of the kinds of the circles of friends that you had, those people had very similar types of activities that mm-hmm. I had. Mm-hmm. So between all those things, there were very little other interactions with other people, friends at school or in terms of the neighborhood. And the only other major things that we would do, obviously, were all family related. Mm-hmm. We had lots of, by that time, we had a number of cousins mm-hmm. Who lived in the area. Mm-hmm. So it was not unusual for us to drive up to Los Angeles when we were down in Orange County, or drive down to L.A. from the Valley, mm-hmm. and visit, you know, so-and-so or so-and-so, a relative, right?
Did you have a girlfriend in high school or junior high?
No, neither. Mm-hmm. In high school, I mean, high school was a rather fast-paced type of thing, mm-hmm. for me. I think there were a number of factors that came into play. One was we had actually moved, again, you know, from L.A. down to Orange County. So I knew no one by the time I went down to Orange County.
Sure.
And second is that I finished 1 year early in high school.
Oh.
Okay. Partly because I had taken all the courses.
Nothing else to take. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, a lot of my time was already spent at the college, mm-hmm. during my last year of high school. Mm-hmm. And there were, again, maybe a dozen people that I would interact with, you know, thinking back on it, mm-hmm. on a daily, mm-hmm. daily basis.
Now, some of the people that I've talked to, because everybody's really smart that's a Pew Scholar, you know, but they talk about the fact that they felt sort of socially ostracized because they were mm-hmm. nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have that experience at
well,
all?
Well, I think it was, I think yes and no. I think, you know, there's always, especially at the high school level, and it probably is worse now, mm-hmm. A huge difference between people that were sports-driven versus academically driven. And I think from that standpoint, you were always socially ostracized by the other group.
Mm-hmm.
You can flip that around and say, well, the sports people were socially ostracized by the academic group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think in terms of numbers, we probably felt that we were clearly in the minority.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Because there were a lot more people that were interested in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, retrospectively, I think that the differences were not that great.
Mm-hmm.
There were clearly people that had no interest in academics, mm-hmm. and there were clearly people that had no interest in sports. But actually, I loved lots of sports,
mm-hmm.
okay? I mean, I loved basketball, even though at that particular point I was extremely short. I think the fact that I was younger than most in my class, I was shorter than clearly almost everybody in my class, mm-hmm. probably clearly did not allow me to participate in as many things that I wish I would have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think also I didn't feel socially ostracized to that degree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew I was different than a lot of other people. But then this may have been sort of a thing that I already accepted, that I was different because I immigrated to the United States already to begin with. So I always felt I was a little bit different
mm-hmm.
than some of my other classmates.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember being that much of a factor weighing in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember a conversation with one of my classmates, you know, him asking me, do you really think this is what you should do? As in specifically, was I spending too much time taking certain kinds of classes?
Mm-hmm.
Was it really wise for me to take all these other additional advanced classes and have obviously less time to interact with my peers at that particular point? And I mean, I could see what he was talking about, but at the same time, I think retrospectively, again, in the long run, it made no difference.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it was an advantage. Because
mm-hmm.
I think, again, the differences in terms of what one wants to do mm-hmm. has a huge impact as to how one interprets it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for my career, how my life is differentiated, high school is only the beginning
mm-hmm.
of what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, not to say that that's better or worse, it was the middle, if not the end part,
mm-hmm.
of their training time, the mm-hmm. educational process before they went out into the mm-hmm. real world. Mm-hmm. So for me, I didn't see it as such that this was a time to necessarily to be able to. I just saw it basically as a springboard to do other things.
Right. I'm going to turn the tape over.